This is Transport Topics Radio.
Industry news vital to today's professional driver.
Here's your host, Dan Ronan.
Welcome to the second hour of Transport Topics Radio here on Sirius XM, Channel 146. It's our mission here at TTR to bring you the latest news and information direct from the reporters who are out there covering the stories, as well as bringing you interviews with the newsmakers as well. To stay updated with any of these developing stories, visit ttn.ws/radio or follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Transport Topics. And to get more Transport Topics audio content, try our daily briefing, available on Amazon Alexa, Google Assist, Spotify, Google Play, and iHeartRadio. We have a very important and topical second hour here on Transport Topics Radio. We'll have a conversation coming up with Eugene Soroka. He's the executive director of the Port of Los Angeles, talking about the supply chain improvements that have been made at that gargantuan facility on the West Coast, and looking forward, of course, to the peak season of 2022. At the bottom of the hour, there's a new report out from ATRI, the American Transportation Research Institute, on the cost of driving a truck. You'll want to stick around to hear from Dan Murray. He's the Senior Vice President of ATRI and one of the authors of the content of that report. But first, our conversation with Gene Soroka from the Port of Los Angeles. Gene, how would you describe where things are at right now? There's been a lot of reporting that there's been a lot of cargo starting to fill up again at your facility, and that the concern level is starting to ratchet up a little bit. What do you say?
Dan, it's great to be back with you as always. We're in much better shape here in Los Angeles than we've been in many, many years. Today, we have 10 ships at anchor waiting to get in and do their work at the Port of LA. They're waiting less than 2 days to arrive, but the story really is we've taken it from 109 ships outside our port complex down to 10. Just amazing work by our marine terminal operators, longshore members, truckers, and so many others. And we've done this while moving the same amount of cargo box for box as we did in our record-setting year of 2021. To top all of that, July looks sensational coming out next week.
What are we looking at in terms of the cargo backlog, in terms of the number of containers that are still on the property?
Right now, I just got the report this morning, Dan. There are about 66,000 container units on the property today. That's a decent number. That means our marine terminals have a lot of maneuverability to welcome the truckers, get cargo moved, and not have to wait because these piles and piles of containers are getting in the way of normal operations. We do have some work yet to get accomplished on the rail side, but those rail terminals in the Midwest, think of Joliet outside of Chicago, Memphis, Dallas, they look like the ports did last year. Importers must pick up this rail cargo at its inland point quicker than they've been doing.
What's your level of concern about warehouse space? Because I know that east of you in the Inland Empire and other places in Southern California, there's been a lot of concern that warehouses are full, the vacancy rate, 1%, 2%. And not only that, but the cost for warehouse space has been just skyrocketing.
All of that's correct. And as we've seen over these past 2.5 years, Dan, if one node in the supply chain gets gummed up, it backs everything else up here to the ports and across the Pacific to Asia. Warehousing space in Southern California is still at a premium. And in those crucial locations of San Bernardino and Riverside counties out in the Inland Empire, we've got vacancy rates of less than 0.5%. Warehouses are being built, but not quickly enough, again, to handle a surge of this kind. We've got to keep that cargo moving out into the domestic economy and being picked up at its last mile store shelf and fulfillment center.
You know, for almost a year now, there's been the threat that's been out there from your port and from Long Beach of the idea of imposing fees if the cargo is not picked up in a timely manner. But you've never pulled the trigger on that. Any thoughts on doing that? And is that something you think you need to do with 66,000 plus containers still on the property?
Well, when it really counted back in October, Dan, as you and I had discussed, the threat of a fee allowed us to move more cargo off this port and realize the best retail sales holiday season in the history of our nation. We dropped those aging containers by 71% simply by announcing that fee. And to this day, we have not collected a dollar. At 66,000 units on the ground, I'm fairly comfortable. I'd like to see that number about 50,000. What we've got right now are about, of the 66,000 units, about half of those are designated for on-dock rail. Again, with all that we've seen over the past 2.5 years, 4 years, dating back to the change in trade policy, there have been many trends throughout. Right now, it's a focus on rail, but with all the data mining that we do, we're able to see these issues before they become problems. And that's where we stand today. I don't see us enacting the fee at this moment in time, but it's a tool we keep in our kit just in case.
Union Pacific, about this time last summer, had a terrible couple of weeks where they had to stop their operations and really just ratchet things down because of service issues they were having. You alluded to some rail issues of your concern. What's your level of concern in terms of the freight railroads? Because they're running, from what I understand, at a high level of work, but they've also got some labor issues as well that are out there with the contract with the railroad workers currently being before a presidential emergency board.
Something happens every day in the supply chain that gives us pause, creates the need to pivot or ratchet up our game. And in this particular case, rail cargo has increased sixfold since February. As you rightly say, there was some time there where cargo had diverted away from rail to truck and domestic on carriage. And then the entire industry rallied to bring this business back to intermodal, which it delivered. And yet it's been tough to ramp up to those levels. The underlying labor issues, the ongoing contract negotiations are also going to be very important to get concluded and make sure folks are out on the job. Again, there's not one lever you can pull either to lay blame or fix issues, but it's about velocity and information. If we're moving this cargo at a high rate of speed safely for our workers, and we have information so we can start seeing around corners, understand what type of land use needs we'll have, the equipment and the skilled labor necessary, we can keep this supply chain moving.
You've said several times that one of the biggest tools that your port has is the Port Optimizer program. We've got about 2.5 minutes before we go to break, and I want to talk about that. Tell our listeners what exactly the Optimizer is and how it works.
It's the nation's first and still only port community system. It's meant to have everybody put their data in and then we can synthesize it to understand what's coming at us, what we need to do, and what's going to happen next. We have upstream visibility in Asia as much as 40 days when vessels are departing far-reaching outports in Southeast and South Asia to get ready for that cargo coming in. Before the Optimizer was brought in here in Los Angeles, our marine terminals had 2 days, maybe four, to understand what was on that ship and get ready to bounce quickly when it arrived. We're not taking anything but generic information. We don't sell this data, and we're not using it untowardly for competitive advantages of some, but not by all. More of this needs to be taken up, and that's what Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg has done by creating the Freight Logistics Optimization Works, or FLOW, that is the precipice to a nationwide port community system.
So this simply allows you to, as a ship is being loaded in China, let's say it's Shanghai, you know better than 4 or 5 weeks out that that ship's going to be coming and it's going to have X amount of cargo and it'll have this type of cargo. And then you can work with your teams and your others folks at the port, the longshoremen and the others, to get ready for that ship when it comes in.
That's it. And again, you know, the easy analogy for us here in the U.S. is when you order a pizza, you can see when the toppings are being put on, when the driver leaves, and when he or she is coming to your door. We don't have that in the container business here in the United States. We're decades behind other trading nations. It's time for us not only to step up, but leapfrog to return to our high level of competitiveness as a trading nation.
Gene Soroka joins us on the Newsmaker line. He's the executive director of the Port of Los Angeles. We'll be back on Transport Topics Radio on Sirius XM Channel 146.
This is Transport Topics Radio. Essential news and information for the professional driver.
We're back on TTR with Gene Soroka. He's the executive director of the Port of Los Angeles joins us on the Newsmaker line from the facility in Southern California. Gene, just picked up on this. You said that the numbers are coming out for the month of July, a little bit more than a week from now. Give us a preview.
It'll be one of our best on record, Dan. And that just shows that not only the work is being done here at the Port of Los Angeles with our great longshore groups, the marine terminals, and all in the supply chain. But as I've said previously in our last press conference, that the cargo arriving to Los Angeles in the weeks and months ahead looks different than the inventory that's already here. We've started to hear retailers talk about their high levels of inventory, the potential need for discounting goods, et cetera. Now we're talking about seasonal products. The back to school and early peak season goods began arriving at the end of June. We're seeing fall fashion, Halloween products come in, and those all important year-end holidays. These savvy American importers pulled forward their orders to make sure that they were not going to get caught in bottlenecks and longer transit time. So you'll see a greater breadth of imports coming in over the next 4 months for that traditional peak season than maybe we've seen in the past.
Gene, there's three big labor issues that have the potential to impact your facility, Long Beach, Oakland, and all up and down the West Coast. We've got the implementation of Assembly Bill 5, this Sacramento, California passed law that was presented to the Supreme Court. The court turned it down. You've got the ongoing ILWU negotiations, and we've got the Railroad Workers Union contract talks that, as I said, that are at a presidential emergency board level. Pick one of the three here, because we've got about 9 minutes left. I want to talk about this. What's your level of concern, let's say, about AB5 with the independent owner operator and model now being in a lot of doubt?
We're in the early weeks of the official implementation of AB5 once the Supreme Court decided not to take up the appeal. And we've heard from those independent truckers. They came down here to the ports of LA and Long Beach several weeks back to voice their opinions and what they'd like to do in a very peaceful and orderly manner. Really great credit to Port Police Chief Tom Gazy for his ongoing community policing efforts. And then some of those folks went up to Oakland, and it was managed a little bit differently. And you saw the disruption to the supply chain there. We've got to keep making sure that these drivers and others have their voice. They've got First Amendment rights, and they've got a message that they need to get out there. But we also know how important this international supply chain is to the U.S. economy. We need to keep that moving as well. Let's see over the next weeks to come as to what we are going to look like. But suffice it to say right now, it's going to be more expensive for a person to drive a truck in this industry, and companies are going to have to catch up pretty quickly in this area too. We'll just need to keep everybody rowing in the same direction. Change is coming, and we have to be anticipatory and keep these guys and ladies moving the cargo.
Should Governor Newsom delay the implementation of this law until the legal system sort of sorts the whole thing out?
Well, I won't speak for the governor. This bill, which became law, has been in place for over 2 years now. I know a lot of folks were gearing up for the different pathways that it could take. There may be further litigation in this area from those who are affected and the people that represent them. Again, I think we need to keep this moving and make sure that the economy, the cargo flow is good while the representation of these truckers is recognized. Not everybody wants to be independent, but not everybody wants to be an employee working a mandated number of hours a day. We've got to thread that needle from a long distance to make sure that we can keep this moving in the right direction. And folks who want to come and work with us really have that great entry-level job to pursue.
Up in San Francisco, the ILWU and PMA are negotiating a new multi-year contract. A couple of weeks ago, they announced that they had an agreement on the medical and health benefits section of the contract. What do you hear about what's going on at the bargaining table, and what's your level of concern?
I'm not really concerned because both sides, who are led by savvy and seasoned negotiators, continue to meet at the table and work through their issues under the collective bargaining process. Getting the health and welfare tentative agreement maybe a month ahead of what was scheduled by some observers is a real win. Now we've got to get to the difficult issues and the important ones for both sides. But as you've noticed, The cargo movement continues to be strong. The productivity is great by the dock workers who are working every ship that comes in and out of here. So I'm still real confident that we're moving in the right direction while all of this cargo is moving at record levels. And both sides have agreed to keep those talks between themselves at the table so there are not distractions outside that affect those negotiations. They're going to keep going, and I feel really good about where we're at right now.
When you go down to the port itself and you get down on the docks and you talk to some of the workers, the men and women with the ILWU, what's the morale like?
Super high. They see all this cargo. They take great pride in their roles and their jobs every day, and they know there's more cargo on the way. This has been an unbelievable stretch of nearly 2.5 years where every month is a peak season month of cargo volume that they've been handling. The rank and file longshore member and their associates, from the marine clerks to the foreman, have been averaging 6 days a week on the job since COVID-19 began in March of the year 2020. So they're just doing awesome work. The health and safety of these folks is job number one every day. The velocity of the cargo and making sure that we're keeping everybody in tune with what's going on. Whether I see them at the grocery store in the evenings and on weekends or official meetings that I hold with the representatives of the labor groups, it's all about telling them what's going to happen next so they too can gear up and meet the challenge ahead like they've done every step of the way.
You spend a lot of time talking about competitive issues in the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach as well, about how it's been difficult to stay competitive. Out on the East Coast at Savannah, that facility is really turning into a juggernaut in the southeastern part of the country. What's your level of concern about staying competitive in Southern California as you see Houston, Savannah, some of the ports that maybe 5 or 7 years ago were smaller, suddenly are creeping up and they're getting a lot of cargo. They're handling cargo that once maybe your facility or Long Beach at one time handled.
We have talked a lot about being competitive, and there are multiple reasons for that. Number one is that this port complex in Southern California is responsible for 1 in 9 jobs in the Southern California 5-county area. That's about 1 million paychecks every week that go to people whose jobs are related to this port. Nationwide, it's about 3 million folks, or 1 in 50. The cargo that traverses our port reaches each and every one of our nation's 435 congressional districts. It truly is a conversation of national significance. That being said, ports around the nation have done a great job. They've hired switched-on leaders. They've aligned with their legislative and policymakers. They've banded regions together to go after federal funding and state-level dollars to be able to invest in infrastructure and make their ports ultra-competitive, which they've had. Griff Lynch, running the Port of Savannah, is just fantastic at what he does. Cargo volume is flowing there. He's got challenges today like we all do. But that combined, Dan, is what's going to be a part of the foundation of making our nation more competitive on the platform of international trade. So with every box that comes through here, it means there are jobs associated to it, and I'm going to continue to drive with everything I've got to make the Port of Los Angeles that gateway that folks want to use day in and day out.
You mentioned infrastructure and improvements in making your facility more competitive. You recently met with Secretary Buttigieg. You're going to get some of that $17 billion or so that's been designated specifically for ports. What are you looking at?
Oh, yes, we will. Here at the Port of Los Angeles, staff and I meet on a regular basis looking at all of our projects, where we're at in the timelines, and the grant funding possibilities that come along with those. For a port like Los Angeles, with such great financial strength and a high tolerance for risk to be out there leading, federal and state funding can accelerate these projects. And for your listeners out there, Dan, I'm talking about repurposing existing land to handle this massive amount of cargo, not only that we witnessed today, but that will be representative of the growth in the future. Putting in grade separations, that means bridges. So we're not impeding commuters and school buses as these trucks are moving in and out. And thirdly, putting more rail into the port so we can quickly unload these ships, load on dock, and get out to the Midwestern points like Chicago, Memphis, Dallas, and beyond. All of that is extremely important. At the same time, we've never seen alignment at the federal, state, and local level like we have in this generation. California Governor Gavin Newsom's budget included $2.3 billion U.S. dollars for ports and carve-outs on electric vehicles, for infrastructure, for emerging technologies. All of this is complementary to what Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti has done to make sure we put the business back in the port here in L.A. So I'm very excited about how our leaders from the political side have done a great job in assigning these dollars to us. Now we got to go out and get them and build these projects faster than ever before.
Before we wrap up, what's your level of optimism or concern about the upcoming peak season and also back to school as we wrap up?
Yeah, I feel really good right now. We called this at the beginning of the year, Dan. We had an early Lunar New Year, second quarter inventory focus for retailers. And then if we hit those two marks, we'd be ready for an earlier than normal peak season. So far, June, really, really well done by all involved. The July numbers will be sensational. And as we look down line, given the numbers I've shared with you today, I feel like we've prepared ourselves to attack the challenge. I feel good today.
Gene Soroka, the executive director of the Port of Los Angeles, joining us on the Newsmaker line. This is Transport Topics Radio on Sirius XM, channel 146.